acting like I'm the reason everything goes fucking wrong. He doesn't sound angry anymore. He sounds sad. Like he's disappointed in himself. Talk to me, Jay. Please. Chapter 11. Jay. Reese has totally blown away all my defenses. When I was shouting at William, I wasn't even thinking straight. I was just filled with rage and blindly arguing to get him off my back. But Reese is actually listening to me. I'm not used to that. I remember being a kid, Dad shouting at the top of his lungs, always screaming at me for one reason or another. How I fucked up doing a chore around the house, how I fucked up in school, how I fucked up his life. No matter how far away I am from that little trailer in Texas that I grew up in, I'll never get far enough away to forget the tone in his voice when he berated me and my bro. Every moment that we needed something from him was a moment of inconvenience that was liable to set him off, sending him flying into his latest tantrum. And he proved with miles just how much he never wanted kids. Just how much of a pain in the ass we were for him to have to deal with. I don't understand why I'm the one who always gets fussed at, I say. Everyone fucks up, but they don't hear about it all the fucking time. They don't get screamed at over stupid shit. I'm always getting shouted at. Even though we're discussing William, I'm talking about Dad. Feels like I carry him with me everywhere I go. Every co-worker who screams at me is just another chance for Dad to lash out at me through them. Reese gazes at me in silence. I don't know what he's doing. Judging me? Blaming me? I wouldn't fucking do this to myself, I insist. This isn't like Tyler. He was just being a dick. William is seriously getting on my case over something stupid. I don't think you do it to yourself. I just wonder if sometimes your attitude toward people is more what turns it into a big deal than the thing that starts these kinds of fights. So you're blaming me? He's just like everyone else. I'm not saying William was right to get that fired up about putting the fucking fuel in the forklift or that Tyler was right when he was being an ass to you. I'm just saying that I'm sure your reaction to them doesn't help things any. No shit. Whatever. If you got a problem with how I am, I can walk today. Why do you have to take it there? I'm trying to help you, Jay. I don't need any help, Reese. I stress his name, emphasizing the way he said mine. But as he gazes into my eyes, I can't help but think how much help I really need. How alone I feel. How alone I've always felt. But I'll be damned if I'm gonna get lectured by some trick. Not a trick. My boss. This is how fucking in the workplace complicates shit. Everyone needs help, he says. Every one of us. I didn't get here today without help or by pushing people away when they try to offer me a hand. Not that I haven't done that in the past. But at some point, you have to accept the assistance. Considering all he's been through, way fucking more than me, I'd be stupid to not at least hear him out. Maybe next time something happens, you could walk away for a bit. Maybe just tell whoever is getting on your nerves that you need a 10-minute break, and then head off. If someone accuses you of something, you can just say, okay, even if they're totally wrong. Just find your bearings and maybe confront them again when you've thought things through. I don't think these sorts of things would turn into a big fight if you took a minute to think them through. But you just start going off like that, and then no one's listening. He has a point. Several points that sound like they're worth considering. Now I see why he's the boss man. He's the first I've ever run into who seems to actually give a shit about his employees. Although, maybe he just cares about me because we fucked around. I wonder if he'd have been as understanding about my tirade if I hadn't let him up my ass a few hours earlier. But he was nice to me, even after I threw him to the ground, and he wasn't fucking me then. So maybe he's just a good guy. I could do that. I admit. I'd appreciate that. And if you need to come chat with me about it, yell at me about it, feel free. I've already given Martin and Carter permission to come and vent to me anytime things are getting hard during the day. Sometimes you just need to get stuff off your chest, but without getting in everyone's faces. So he does this for more people than just me. Suddenly I don't feel as special. But in a good way. Like he just sees me as any other employee, not like I need special care because of anything we've done. I'm also a little disappointed. I don't know why. We just fucked around a bit. He doesn't owe me anything because of it. He's the kind of guy someone would be real lucky to have. A real catch. Hot as fuck. A good guy. Good listener. Someone has been through enough shit in his life that he understands what's important. I don't know why I'm letting my thoughts go there. Not like he'd want to do anything with me, some asshole he works with, someone he's hooked up with twice. I could never be the kind of guy someone like Reese would want to be with. He'd want someone on his level. Someone successful, someone with money. Someone who doesn't have all these fucking petty attitude problems. Which must seem like total bullshit to someone who's been through such serious shit. He's been through war. God. Why am I fucking thinking like this? I don't even know this guy. Thanks, I say. Can I go now? I need to get back on the floor. Need to get away from him. He seems surprised by my curt response. Oh, shit, no, I didn't mean that like I'm not listening, I say. I really do appreciate it. I just think I should get back to help out with getting this stuff shipped out. He blinks a few times before saying, sure, go ahead. I start for the door. One more thing, he says. I stop and turn back around. You want to swing by my place later? Of course I want to swing by his place. This ass is yours whenever you need it, I say with a wink. His lips curl at the edges, assuring me that whatever I do for him must at least be good enough for him to keep coming back for more, which is a fucking relief, because it feels good every time, and I want it again, and again, and for however long it keeps feeling as good as it does. I head back to my work. But William doesn't give me any more shit about the forklift, which he filled with fuel after I headed up to talk with Reese. As I help move some boxes onto the trucks, I find I'm filled with an eagerness that I've never really felt while working before. I actually have something to look forward to other than just getting home and desperately trolling Grinder for a trick. I shouldn't feel this giddy about it. It pisses me off a little. I don't do relationships. They're complicated. They never end well. I've only had a few in my early 20s, but after learning that the only way they end is catching someone messaging another guy behind your back, I decided I couldn't do that to myself anymore. It wasn't worth the fights or the screaming matches. It wasn't worth putting my heart out there only for it to get beaten up. When my shift ends, I head back to my place for a bit, shower off, pick out what I'm gonna wear. I don't have anything nice, just my work clothes. Closest thing is a polo with a lube stain on it. I debate for a few minutes before I decide it's not noticeable enough for me to stress about it. I throw it on and head to Reese's place. He's also cleaned up when I arrive, smelling of a fragrance that catches my attention, a striking cologne that's almost as hypnotizing as he is. He leads me inside. Want a drink? A drink? Oh, I don't have to fucking go, I ask, teasing, but kinda serious too. No, he says, turning to me, a serious expression on his face. It comforts me. What am I doing? If this all goes south, I'm gonna have to quit this job and move on. To where next? How many cities do I need to bounce around to before I realize that wherever I go, I'm still there? My problems are still there. The pain and the hurt is still there. A drink would be nice, I say.
Chapter 12. Reese.
I fix him a vodka Sprite at the kitchen bar. He sits in one of my stools, looking cute as fuck in a burgundy polo, his chest filling it out real nice. I can see his nipples through it. Makes me want to skip any pretense and strip him down, take him the way I've wanted to since we fucked in the supply closet. But I don't want him to think I'm an asshole who only wants him for his body. He's a good guy. He's just guarded. And that's something I more than understand. He looks around uneasily. I know he's still in shock from how clean my place is. He had a similar expression on his face when he was here the first time. Makes me self-conscious. It's the service, I explain. I offer him his drink and start making my own. That's why I keep everything so clean. You don't really have the luxury of keeping things tidy when you're shacking up with a bunch of other guys and you're spending your nights roughing it around the desert. I'm trying to downplay the far messier explanation, one I'm not ready to share with him. That makes a lot of sense, he says, appearing sympathetic rather than judgmental, which is more often than not the response I get from tricks that I bring home. What was it like? He asks. Tension rises within me, and he must sense it because just as quickly as he asks, he says, Sorry, that was a stupid question. I guess you don't want to talk about it, considering... No. I'm getting better. Laura says it's good for me. She's my therapist. We've been working on this together for a long time. Believe me. He must think I'm all kinds of fucked up with the way I talk about this shit. He can't understand what it was like. Can't understand everything we went through. Can't understand what it's like to murder a human being and have to find a way to make peace with that in your own head. To go around constantly trying to justify putting a gun to someone's head and blowing their brains out because you were scared as shit that they were about to kill you. At first, I say, it wasn't much different from how I was raised. I was with the state when I was a kid. You know, the ones that never get adopted, that was me. So I just moved around from one orphanage to another, shared dorm rooms with a bunch of other guys. I signed up for the armed services because I was told it was a good way to pay for my education, that it was the only way I'd be going to college. So I was in the reserves, studied business at UT, and then we went to war with Iraq and I was deployed. It was about a year that I was gone. Most people were deployed for 14 months. And that was it. I don't think most of us realized what we were getting ourselves into. We were kids. And at first, boot camp was fun. It was this bonding experience where you got to hang with all these cool guys and goof around. But then shit got real when we were being shouted at by our superior officers and being told to scramble to get away from the machine guns and the IEDs. IEDs. Improvised explosive devices. That's what caused a hell of a lot of injuries during the war. It's how I can't say it. I try to get the words out, but I choke on them. Got it. He says as though he's trying to give me an excuse not to finish my sentence. I appreciate it. I think a lot of guys thought the war would be real black and white. But is the woman running down the street an ally? Or is that baby she's carrying really a bomb? You don't know. and you have to make split-second decisions, a lot of which you regret. He stares at me wide-eyed. I got so lost in telling him about my experience that I almost forgot he was here. That sounds horrible, he says. It's not something a bunch of 18-year-olds should be expected to do. Die for their country. Suffer for their country. Too many guys I know came back from that messed up. I imagine the distant look in Caleb's eyes. His agitation whenever we tried to go out with some of our old friends, the way he broke down when some of his anti-war buddies gave him a hard time about having participated. That all bothered me too, but not the way it bothered him. I loved Caleb so fucking much. And now he's fucking gone. Forever. Jay's eyes are still on me. I'm trying to figure out what he's thinking, but as he glances down, I realize I've stopped making my drink. I grab the Sprite bottle and pour some on top of the vodka in the glass. I stir it with the spoon I left out from making Jay's drink. Then I take a sip. Sorry. I needed a little something. I would too. Jesus. Crazy to think it was that long ago. The war in Iraq? Yeah. Over a decade. And there are days when it feels like I'm still right there. Like I never came home to this life. Like everything that's happened between now and then is the dream. And the war is the only reality. That's crazy, Jay says. How that short amount of time can fuck a person up so much. Yeah. Real crazy. So the post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you mind if I ask you about that? Yes, I mind a lot. Started having a lot of episodes after I got back, I say. Intense. Unforgiving. Unbearable. Made it difficult for me to go to work. After I started a job at a distribution warehouse in Vinings, I had a serious episode. One of my coworkers had actually been through NAM and encouraged me to get help. It's not a complete lie, the story about the episodes and my coworker's well-meaning attempt to help me are true, but really, I quit that job shortly after and found another, hoping to avoid the issue. It wasn't until a year later that I sought treatment. But that's something I don't want him asking questions about, something he surely doesn't even want to know about. Well, I think we've talked enough about my grim life, I say. What about you? You seem like you're pretty well-traveled. Like you've been around the block a few times. What's your story? I don't have much in the way of a story, not like yours. I was raised by my aunt and uncle from the age of 12 until I was old enough to get out on my own, and I never really liked school and didn't have the means to go anyway, so I had to start looking for work right after. Picked up odd jobs wherever I could, this and that. I don't like people ordering me around. Well, except in the bedroom, that is. He winks at me, and my cock twitches. A rush of adrenaline shoots through me. Oh, he's so fucking sexy that even something so simple gets me all worked up. So, I obviously have trouble staying in one place. But why do you move around so much? Why not just find a new job in the same area? He takes a sip of his drink and shrugs. I guess I just haven't found anywhere I really like. You know? It'd be nice to settle down somewhere. To find a place that I really like, but nowhere I've gone has really impressed me. And what do you think of Atlanta? Nice enough. Got a lot of horny guys on Grindr, I've noticed. He has a sly look in his eyes and a fat grin across his face. Oh, yeah. We have plenty of those. The weather here could be better. Damn, it's a hot-ass summer. Humidity isn't very forgiving, especially in the factory. No, it isn't. But you think you'll stick around?
Maybe.
If things keep working out as well as they are. You know? With the guys? Despite the playfulness of his tone, I feel like he's totally serious.
So that's how you live your life? I ask. Some place doesn't work out? Then you just move along?
Look, I don't need a lecture right now. I'm not trying to lecture you. I'm just asking a question. Not everything has to be a fight, Jay.
He takes a breath, once again reminding me of how Caleb would have to calm himself when he got short with me.
It's just easier that way.
How many cities have you lived in?
Let's see. San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, Baton Rouge, Mobile for a while, Boston for a bit, New Orleans. And then here, I guess.
You got a place to run to next?
I do, actually, he says, his grin suggesting he's always ready to be out the door as soon as things start heading south.
Was thinking that Chicago might be nice.
I figured I might at least like the weather better.
The cold?
It'd be a change from this humidity, at least for a bit.
What?
You haven't lived in a lot of different places?
I grew up in Tennessee, but I moved here shortly after I got back from Iraq.
Why Georgia?
I tense up. I don't like the conversation shifting back to me. But I've spent years learning the art of ambiguity, so I can handle it.
To stay close to someone, I reply.
Ooh, a lover?
A good friend.
Must have been a really good friend if you were willing to move here for him.
He was. The best of friends.
A guy named Caleb.
I choke a little on his name as I say it. Met him when we first went to war. We hit it off real well. The tension rising in my chest is intense. I worry that if I'm not careful, I might have a panic attack.
Chapter 13. Jay.
I can tell this guy means a lot to Reese, just by the way he struggled through his name. But he's become even more rattled than when he was talking about the war. It makes me wonder why this Caleb guy isn't in his life anymore. They must have been a couple. Surely this guy had to have been more than a friend, like Reese said he was. That would explain why he acts so weird when he says his name. Reese drinks from his cocktail, but he takes his time as he gulps down what must be at least a shot's worth of vodka. I'm waiting for him to continue, but he just stares off.
What happened to him?
I ask, figuring that's where the story was leading.
He passed away,
he says, his face turning red, his jaw tightening as he seems to be trying to keep himself together over it.
Sorry, I say.
Didn't mean to hit on a sore subject. He looks at me, but not really at me, through me, like he's still thinking about this friend.
Not your fault,
he says finally.
He was a Georgia native. We didn't get along very well when we first met. He was like you, a stubborn shit who got into trouble with his mouth. Didn't like to take orders.
Had a beautiful body because every time he talked back to the sergeant, he would have to do push-ups. He'd tell everyone that boot camp was the best thing that ever happened to his six-pack. He chuckles.
One night, maybe a week after we'd been put in the same squad, we were all drinking and he turned to me and said, "I don't like the way you look at me." He seemed really serious about it, too.
He must have caught me looking at him in the showers, which I would do sometimes because he was hot as hell. Never had any intention of doing anything with him.
He just was gorgeous. So it was something that would catch my eye occasionally.
I figured he was going to be an ass after that, but the next day, he wrapped his arm around me and started chatting me up about this other guy he didn't like in our squad.
We were inseparable after that. He was a good guy. He got into the reserves because, like me, he didn't have a lot of options outside of it. He grew up in a small town in a big family, a single mother who had a hard time keeping up with them all. She passed away when he was in high school. She didn't have much of anything to leave to the kids, so he had to make it on his own. He figured it was either the army with the possibility of getting a real education or winding up a mechanic in a shop. He studied engineering. When he got back, he wound up being a mechanic for a while anyway.
"What happened to him?" I ask.
"PTSD got to be too much for him, and he just..." He stops short, telling me everything I need to know. I can tell by the way he keeps moving his lips that he wants to go on, but I don't think he can right now.
"Sorry," he says. "Wasn't planning on talking about these kinds of things tonight."
"What were you planning on then?" I ask, raising my eyebrows suggestively, hoping to distract him from the pain the memory of his friend obviously stirred. Reese forces a smile. I rise from the stool and head around the bar, eyeing him with a look that surely makes my intent clear. He appears to slip out of whatever trance he was in as I approach him. I kiss him. Hard. I want to yank him from the darkness before it grabs him and leaves him shaking like I've seen it do before. He sets his hand on my face, and my cheek pricks with excitement as I enjoy our kiss, tasting the vodka and Sprite on his tongue. He turns and guides me, pushing me back against the bar, pressing tight against me. Even padded by our clothes, his muscles feel so good against me. I like the sensation. I like that he's such a fucking tower of a man. I want to be crushed beneath his weight as I'm filled with him.
"You're a damn good kisser," he says as he pulls away and gazes at me.
I'm enchanted by those blue eyes. They're right on me. Not somewhere else. It feels so good. Good enough to concern me. It reminds me that the moment things don't work out between us, I'll have to hop on a flight to Chicago and say goodbye to this city. And to him.
"You're a damn good top," I tell him. "I've never let anyone dominate me like that. Take complete control. Do whatever he wanted."
"You usually top?"
I nod, and he smiles. He kisses me briefly.
"No wonder you're so tight.
I wondered if you were going to be able to take it that first time."
"Oh, that little thing?" I tease as I glance down at his crotch. He beams, apparently amused because I'm sure plenty of his previous tricks have let him know just how big he is. He cups his hands around my ass cheeks. "Well, I sure as fuck can take it now," I tell him.
"Why don't you show me?"
He leads me to the bedroom, and we do what we do best, hot as ever. His hands grope my body as his cock fills me. He makes me scream out again and again. I don't hold back at all tonight. Sweat drips from our bodies onto the bed as his muscles glisten under the overhead light. I get a good view of every part of his room as we change positions, each time with him hitting my prostate in a more satisfying way than the last. And soon, we're laying spread out across the bed, gazing at one another. He never checked out during our fuck. He was ever present, with me, totally wrapped up in the experience. I like knowing that our fucking can do that for him. At least, for a moment, help him escape from the demons that haunt him. I sigh a long, drawn-out sigh. "I don't know what I'm gonna do about this," I say. I don't usually do regular things like...
"What?"
"Oh, shit. I'm embarrassed. I shouldn't have fucking said anything. He probably just wants to hit it and quit. Sorry, I was just thinking... it was hot for me. I didn't want to assume that you'd want to keep this going.
I'm having a very good time, too.
So you'd want to, keep this up? I feel dumb saying it, but I'd be lying if I tried to act like this wasn't the hottest sex I've ever had. And I'm just not ready to quit it yet. You know what? Never mind. I want to die right now. Reese leans toward me and wraps his arm around me.
Jay, I can't get my mind wrapped around you.
For a guy who confronted me outside a bathroom for sex and who'll start a fight about anything, you sure seem like you're getting awfully flustered right now.
I don't ever do this, I confess.
What? Hook up with the same guy? More than once or twice? Reese's expression shifts to surprise.
Seriously?
Ever? Obviously, you've had regular hookups in the past. Not outside of boyfriends, and that's been a real long fucking time for me. This is very new. But I want to keep fucking if that's what you want.
That's definitely what I want.
He kisses me. He's the one trying to calm me down now. He runs his hand across my face, his fingers sliding through the sweat that still covers my flesh. When he pulls away, his breath slams against my skin as he rubs his nose against mine. I need to be careful about what's happening here. The ease he makes me feel. The heat between us. All this is dangerous. All this is the kind of stuff that leads to me getting hurt. Has in the past, at least. I've been good about guarding my heart, keeping myself from getting wounded. But Reese is already sliding past my usual barriers. Nice as he seems, I know how guys are. They always seem nice in the beginning, always seem like the last thing in the world they would do is hurt you, but in the end, that seems to be all they ever do.
This is going to get a little tricky, Reese says.
I knew it. Not even a moment after he said he was fine with hooking up with me, he's found an issue with us messing around.
We won't be able to fuck around at the office like we did today. Maybe occasionally. But we're going to have to be more careful.
I have plenty of condoms. I say it playfully. But it's not really a joke.
That's not what I mean, he says,
his brows lifting in amusement.
I just think it'd be a good idea for us to keep this as quiet as possible.
Did you think I was going to tell someone? Who are all these friends you think I have? He laughs.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying.
I'm fine with keeping it however quiet we need to. I didn't come out here to start a riot in the office.
Well, you sure as fuck found a way, he says, planting another kiss.
My dick shifts. His hand slides up my leg and he gropes my shaft. God, he makes me so fucking hot.
Looks like it's time to go again, he says, before kissing me again.
I'm all his tonight. Ready for him to take me in whatever way he sees fit. I just want to be fucked again and again until I can't think straight, until I forget all about the past. And I hope he's eager to fuck me until he loses all concept of all the horrible things that have happened to him.
Chapter 14. Reese. Jay stands behind the glass screen that divides the shower from the rest of the bathroom. He faces the wall. It's an unspoken agreement we've made for when I'm entering. We never have to discuss it. He just knows I don't want him to see me come in. And he doesn't want to watch as I hop onto the bathroom on one foot, across the rubber mat that covers the tile floor. There's a mat in the shower as well to keep me from slipping. For many years, I sat in a chair to wash off, like my prosthetist suggested. But this is how I prefer to live, because I can have a shower that resembles the sort I used to have with my fully functional leg. I open the door to the shower and hop in, gripping on to the metal rail I installed along the wall. This is one of the many showers Jay and I have shared in the past 2 weeks, ever since we made this regular deal. He's the only guy I've ever showered with since I've had my prosthesis. I've gotten used to taking it off around him. And I'm not as shy about my residual limb, which cuts off mid-shin. Not fucking thrilled about him seeing it, but he never makes me feel like he's judging me because of it. Just the occasional uneasy glances, but he doesn't push, doesn't ask questions. Something I'm appreciative of. He turns to me, smiling as he continues massaging some shampoo into his hair. "I think I got some in my eye," he says, squinting. I chuckle. I doubt he really did, but he'll make a joke whenever I have an awkward moment like this. I think he just wants to take my attention off my issues. "You're so full of shit," I say as I approach him. I study his face up close, and he sneak attacks me with a kiss. He grips onto the back of my head and pulls me closer to him so that my head's under the running water. I'm lost in the sensations he awakens within me, as I always am, enjoying his touch like when we were both screaming out in ecstasy just a few minutes ago. He pulls away and opens his eyes wide. "Okay, so maybe I didn't have anything in my eye after all," he says, his lips curling into a wicked smirk. I chuckle. Never would have suspected a guy wound up as tight as Jay would be so playful. But the more we're around each other, the more he acts like a kid. Silly. Teasing. Carefree. And it helps me take some things a little less seriously. We mess around a little in the shower before we finish up. He leaves first, and I wait until he's out to hop into my hands-free crutch. It's like a mini-crutch that I can strap my residual limb into so that I can get around a bit to put on my prosthesis. It's a pain in the ass to get it on, but I prefer to wear it when he's here. Usually won't take it off until right before we go to sleep. I'm thankful that he gives me the privacy I need when I'm getting in and out of it. That he doesn't act like it's some great inconvenience. Once I get my prosthesis on, I slide into a pair of boxers and head into the kitchen, where he stands in front of the pantry, a box of Pop-Tarts in his hand. I approach and wrap my arms around him as he removes a chocolate tart from the foil wrapper. He takes a bite. "Stop it," Jay says, his mouth full of his midnight snack. "Stop what?" I ask as I kiss along his neck. He chuckles as he tilts his head, inviting me to keep tasting the treat that is his body. A drop of water slides from his hairline, down his neck. He smells of my coconut body wash. With just a towel around his waist, his body is mine to enjoy as I grope and fondle his muscles. This gym-induced physique that I'm so fucking appreciative of. I want Jay to know I'm grateful for every bit of effort he puts into developing these muscles, but his sexual charisma extends far beyond his body. He's the kind of guy who could be 20 pounds overweight, and I'd still want to drive my hard cock into him. He backs his ass up against my pelvis, keeping his shoulder blades pressed against my chest. I love when he surrenders his body to me like this. He takes another bite of his Pop-Tart, and I smile into his neck. "Jay, you must have really worked up an appetite." He spins around so I can feel the hard-on beneath the towel against my boxers, my naked torso rubbing against his. He swallows his snack and sets the remainder of it on the counter beside him. I notice a few crumbs slip out of the wrapper. "Oh, shit," he says, apparently sensing that my OCD impulses have kicked in. "Fuck, sorry." He breaks away and picks up the Pop-Tart. He grabs a dish rag and wipes the mess into the sink. I fold my arms together and watch as he freaks out even more than I would have about the mess. He folds the top of the tart wrapper and places it back in the box in the pantry before turning to me. "There we go. All better," I chuckle.
You are too fucking adorable.
I'm not going to be the messy lay you end up complaining to everyone about, he says.
Oh, you already are the messy lay. It's just usually messy because you're covered in your own cum. I notice you never mind that mess.
He winks as he approaches me and moves in for another kiss.
I say, chocolate. Delicious. His grin makes me hard again. So fucking hard.
He reaches down and grabs my girth, stroking up and down like he wants to get me worked up again.
Oh my God, you're good to go already? Jay asks.
I have to say, you might need to give me one of these magic Cialis pills if this is what it does to you. As much as I've never cared to talk about needing help to get it up, the way Jay's so impressed with my constant hard-on doesn't make me feel like any other man but a fucking Superman.
I've been with guys who can keep going, he adds, but this is just fucking ridiculous.
I cup his ass cheeks. Can I take that as an invitation to enjoy this ass again?
He pulls away.
Shut up. You've already had it 3 times. We gotta at least finish 1 episode. The other night, Jay stumbled upon this series on Netflix, Sultry Scandals. It's a crime reenactment show. All the stories they feature have a sexy twist in them. They're typically centered around a bunch of people with too much money for their own good who start having exciting affairs with the maid, plumber, or pool boy. It all leads up to a murder. So we spend each episode trying to figure out who's going to be offed by whom and why. Fun as the show is, it wouldn't be as much fun if I didn't have Jay here to joke about it with. And most of the fun is in checking out all the hot models they hire to reenact the crimes, models whose bodies they scan up and down and all around, while a boring-ass voiceover gives the show some excuse for existing. Between the sex, our daily chats, and our TV time, I like having Jay around. He started spending the nights here. He brings his duffel bag with fresh clothes and a toothbrush so we can maximize the amount of playtime we get. We've only missed 2 nights together since last week, and both of those have been so that I could see my prosthetist and attend my group PTSD sessions. Most of my other appointments are during the day, though. I just take some time off for them. I would rather skip my group sessions for more time with Jay, but I know better. I know how bad shit can get if I drop the ball, and it's not worth it. If anything, that would put me at risk for not being able to enjoy the time I get to spend with him, especially now when I'm more fragile than usual, when I can feel the uneasiness lingering within me, ready to strike. I've been trying to ignore it and pretend that losing myself in my greed for Jay's body can protect me from the pain, but I know better. Still, our time together is so valuable to me. I haven't been with anyone who knew about my issues in a long time. I don't feel as alone as I usually do. He dulls the pain that I'm so used to experiencing. We return to the bedroom, kissing, our hands pressing against each other's bodies as we grope and fondle one another. He fights out of my grasp and grabs the remote from the nightstand. The remote was sitting on the comic section of the newspaper, something I've learned he likes to peruse before he goes to bed. It's cute watching him chuckle while he's reading them. He gets this whimsical expression on his face, and his eyes light up like they do when I'm hitting his prostate just right, when he's getting so fucking close to blowing his wad. Come on, Jay says. We just have to find out who did it this one episode. And then we can get back to playtime. He wears this big-ass smile that is so distant from the scowl he always wore when he first started working at the factory. I like seeing him smile. Being the reason he's smiling. Unlike you, some of us don't have a quick refractory period, he teases as he sits up and presses play. I wrap my arms around him and pull him back down onto the bed. Fuck, he calls out, reminding me of how many times he's cursed when we've fucked. He turns to me, and we kiss. I peel the covers back,
exposing his dick, stroking it so that he gets hard again. Looks like I'm not the only one with a quick refractory period. You fucking jerk, he says as he grabs the edge of the towel and slings it over his steadily increasing erection. No. We have to find out who did it. Now be quiet. He shifts his attention to the wall-mounted TV across from the bed. This'll be our third attempt at finishing the episode. I slide under the covers and lie back on my pillows before resting my hand on his head, still a little damp from the shower. He lies down beside me, placing his hand on my abs. The voiceover continues as the camera pans across the body of a hottie redhead with massive pecs and a serious package that we can see in the jeans he wears. I just want to say screw the show and get to the fucking again. I'm not always this sex-crazed, but despite how much I'm trying to act like I'm just horny tonight, I know the real reason why. The day after tomorrow's the big day. The day I've been dreading, which threatens to yank me out of everything wonderful I've shared with Jay and drag me into my dark place again. I'm scared as shit about that. I was agitated a few weeks ago, but Jay's offered such a good distraction, helped dull my awareness of the impending pain, and given me something to look forward to instead. Oh, fuck, Jay says. He grabs his phone off the nightstand. What's up?
I meant to download this new Louis C.K. comedy special to listen to while I'm on break tomorrow.
Louis C.K.?
He's a stand-up comedian. I've already listened to all the specials I downloaded. I heard he was coming to Atlanta in a few months, and when I went to check it out, I saw he had a new special out.
So, that's what you're doing whenever I see you with your earbuds in. You're listening to a comedian?
Not just a comedian. I love stand-up comedy. Richard Pryor, Tim Allen, Joan Rivers, Rita Rudner.
Who the fuck is Rita Rudner?
She's one of my favorites. She's from the 80s. Razor-sharp wit, clever-ass jokes.
There's that excited expression again. And that look in his eyes like he's floating on fucking cloud nine.
He keys into his phone for a bit before saying, "There. Downloading. It'll be all set for my break tomorrow."
He looks like he's so damn proud of himself before he repositions himself in the bed, placing his hand back on my abs. Come on. You don't get to act this adorable and then expect me not to defile the crap out of you, I say. I didn't say we couldn't mess around, but we should at least finish this one episode. He winks at me as he pets my torso. I like when he touches my body like it belongs to him.
His attention returns to the TV. God, he's incredible, Jay says, as we both enjoy the model on the screen, more fixated on his hot body than giving any shits about the narrative that's trying to explain the crime his character committed.
You think he's hotter than this hot slab of meat you're in bed with? I ask.
Jay turns to me, beaming. He's okay.
He slides his hand down my torso and lifts the covers to reveal my fully erect dick.
And big as he looks in those jeans? I doubt he can compete with that, he admits.
You just remember that.
I roll over on top of him. I feel frisky, like I did when I was in my fucking early 20s. Seeing him all excited about stand-up comedians got me all worked up.
We start making out again.
The episode? He insists between kisses. But he's not trying to push me away again. He surrenders to me. I've won. And I know it. Now for some victory, ass.
I'd feel bad using you like a blow-up doll if you weren't enjoying it so much, I say.
My phone vibrates on the nightstand, again and again. I try not to look, but one glance over and I see the familiar number. My face flushes.
You got a little trick lined up?
Jay teases.
Shut up. The only nights you haven't been here have been the nights I have group sessions, so you sure as fuck know that isn't the case.
He beams like he's proud of how my schedule has revolved around him the past couple of weeks. And he should be. I love being able to sneak home together and spend the morning coordinating exactly how far apart we'll arrive to work to keep anyone from being suspicious. But despite my attempts at losing myself in him, I'm distracted. Why did she have to call right now? Couldn't I have had one more night? I've already been dreading the next few days. Knew I'd have to find an excuse to get out of fucking around with Jay. But I've been in such denial since we started messing around. I'd rather just pretend it isn't real. But as with so many things in my life, my thoughts keep going back to the darkness. The sound of my phone vibrating on the nightstand doesn't just conjure up my memories with her, but memories of the crippling pain I suffered with for so long. The pain that still returns on occasion, sieging my body and capturing my mind. In an instant, I'm transported back to the days when I wasn't strong enough to battle my emotions. When I was alone, and hopeless, and afraid. Chapter 15. Jay. Something changed the moment he got that call. He went from being silly and laughing to being totally serious in an instant. Who the fuck could it have been that made him do a complete 180? And why is he starting to sweat? My insecurity creeped in when I first heard the phone vibrating against the nightstand. I thought it might have been another guy. Even if it was, it's not like we're exclusive. Hell, we've only been doing this for 2 weeks. I don't have a right to pry into his extracurricular interests. But I don't think that's what this is. He's not acting shady. He's acting like something scared the shit out of him. Like it was death itself trying to get a hold of him. Between the sweat beating on his forehead and his ghostly pale flesh, it seems to have set off an episode. Was it the sound of the phone vibrating? Surely that wasn't enough to surprise him. Whatever the reason for the shift in his attitude, I know what my job tonight is. To help him forget. I lean up and kiss him again. But he doesn't kiss back. As I pull away, I see that distant look in his eyes. I reach down to feel his girth. He's still hard, but I remind myself that it's probably just the meds. Reese?
Sorry, he says. I don't know if I can do anything else tonight.
What's wrong? Talk to me. His Adam's apple shifts as he swallows.
Nothing. He says, I'm not feeling it right now.
He must know I can tell his behavior changed entirely because of that call. But in the grips of this mood that's captured him, he can't face whatever it stirred. He rolls onto his back. I feel empty. Like he's just robbed me of my joy, of my excitement, of my playfulness. Who was it? I ask.
What?
Who just called you? He shrugs. Come on, Reese. 1 minute you're crawling all over me, and the next you look like you're about to have a panic attack.
It's not like a guy or anything, he says quickly, as though that was my biggest concern.
That wasn't what I was worried about, I say. He's quiet again. I can tell there's a lot more to it. But I recall what the articles I've read about PTSD said about pressing, that I need to give him some space and not overwhelm him.
It was just someone from my past. Someone who reminds me of a lot of shit that I went through.
I'm relieved that he told me that much. He's quiet for a minute before he says,
Look, I know we've been going at this pretty regularly. But do you mind if I have a few days to myself?
I tense up at the suggestion. Is he trying to get rid of me? Does he not want to keep this up?
No.
I push my insecurity to the back of my mind. He just started acting this way over that phone call. And if it's someone from his past, maybe a friend he served with, then it's likely forcing him to relive all those nightmares that are the reason he has episodes to begin with. Whatever. That's fine. Shit. I tried to say it like I really am fine, but I can't hide my disappointment. Can't hide that I just want to curl into a ball and cry. I just need a few days, he adds. Why does he have to be so goddamn vague about it? And a few days? That could be 2 days, a week, longer. I'm spoiled with all the nights we've spent together, all these amazing nights. To think I'll have to do without even a few with Reese is painful. There's an ache in me. A hunger. Like he just told me I'd have to go days without food or water. I try to tell myself he'll be fine. That he'll snap out of whatever funk he's in soon enough and things will be back to normal, but I'm scared as hell that won't happen. That if I give him space, he'll just walk away from this and never call me again. I don't want to believe he could do that. But if it's that easy for him to walk away now, maybe he needs to, since I can feel that these fuck sessions are moving towards something else, something that maybe neither of us is ready for. Okay, Reese, just let me know, and I'll come running back into your arms again. It's a joke. I'm hoping it'll lighten his mood, but it doesn't work. He rolls off me and relaxes on his pillow, staring forward as Sultry Scandals continues playing on the TV. He breathes quickly, his chest rising and falling rapidly. He's gone. Lost in the past again. Lost in pain. I wish I could pull him out of it. But I don't think that'll be happening tonight. All I can do is be here for him. When the episode ends, I turn the TV and the lamp on the nightstand off. I tell him night, but he doesn't respond. I'm not sure he even heard me. I lie down in bed, facing him. The moonlight that breaks through the blinds shifts in his eyes as he stares at the ceiling. It's just a few days, I tell myself, and maybe he'll rethink even that once he finds his balance again. I hope so. My anxiety about his uneasiness keeps me up for another hour before I drift off to sleep. When I wake up, he's already in the bathroom. He hasn't put on his prosthetic yet. He grips the sink with one hand for support as he dries off with a towel. I hope he's already recovered. But when he enters the bedroom, he skips our usual session of fooling around, puts on his prosthetic, and changes into his work clothes. We don't talk except when he plans out the time I should leave so that I can arrive at work without anyone suspecting what we're up to. We don't ever kiss goodbye, but for some reason, when he leaves today, I wish we had. I needed the reassurance. I remind myself that we're not like that, it's just fucking, and I can set aside my own insecurities while he recovers from whatever he's going through. Still, I can't shake the fear that he might think there's something wrong with us. I remind myself that all this started when he got that phone call last night. But the insecurity within me has my thoughts spiraling off into so many different directions. I wish he'd just let me in and tell me why it was so goddamn important for him to spend these next few days on his own.
Chapter 16. Reese.
I knew I'd get another call today. I just didn't know what time. When her number pops up on my phone, I tense up. Sweat collects on my forehead and palms. I can't answer, not today. I won't even listen to the message. I know what she'll say. That she's sorry for my loss. That she misses me. That she misses him. That she wishes we could be a part of each other's lives. I wish I could do that. If ever there's someone who wants to be there for me, it's Melanie. She was a saint. An angel who would have battled her way through hell for me. Not just because I'm the one she wanted to spend her life with,
but because she's a good person. Guilt rises inside me as I think of all the time she's tried to reach out and all the times I've just ignored her. I should be able to talk to a woman I was married to. A woman whose only mistake in our relationship was how she continued to love me to the point where it turned on her. I remember years earlier when she would ask me, "Where are you, Reese?" It was before I looked for help. She'd encourage me to do it, but I wouldn't. I didn't want to talk to some shrink who didn't have a clue what it was like to be in a war, who couldn't possibly understand what I experienced. Neither could Melanie, even though she wanted to. I feel bad about us for so many reasons, because she loves me, because she did everything she could, and it was never enough. She wants to at least be friends, but I can't since she just reminds me of all the darkness in my past, and I'm terrified that bringing her back into my life will invite back all those awful memories and drag me back to that nightmarish place I was once in. Even worse, I'm scared that I'll hurt. Not just myself, but her too. And I've already hurt her enough. I wish I could push her call out of my head so that I can get through the day. I considered not even coming in, taking the day off like I've done in the past. But I know where that leads. I just lie in bed, my mind wandering through corridors and labyrinths of thoughts that will only bring me shaking to my knees in grief and horror. The past 2 years, Laura's encouraged me to work through the pain. And it's been more successful than trying to grapple with these things on my own. I have her number if I need anything. But she's on vacation with her kids in Florida, and I don't plan on bothering her. I head into the warehouse, not looking at Jay. I've avoided looking at him since I left yesterday morning. He knows something's up. He can tell I'm agitated, and if anyone deserves to know the truth, it's him. But I don't even want to face this myself, let alone talk to him about it. I'm just grateful that he's backed off. All I've gotten from him has been a text to ask if I'd be interested in meeting up after work today. I just can't do it, though. Not tonight. It'd be better for me to have him over than be alone, but I'd be useless to him. Wouldn't be in the mood for sex or being playful. I'd be in my own world, and he'd be sitting there, watching me suffer, feeling uneasy. He didn't sign up for that. William,